She missed the first 15 minutes. So anyway, but these are the things that we're going to be looking at, is things that Paul sacrificed and was willing to give up. What had the Philippians done to improve Paul's circumstances? Even in prison, there was something they could do. What, they weren't there. What did they do to help his circumstances? Hello?
They had shared with them, actually, in care, in verse 14, shared verse 16, and they had sent a gift at least once, and you find that in 2 Corinthians 9. I mean, 11.
Yeah. Well, we're going to see. We're going to talk about the two times that we know of that they sent him help. But this time, verse 10 said he rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last you have revived your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned before, but you lacked opportunity. They evidently could not afford to send anything to Paul before now. But that is, they were willing to share what they had with him now to the ability that they could. And Paul appreciated that. And he rejoiced in that. So the Philippians had a history with Paul. And we're going to look at that a little bit. Verse 15. Kim, would you read that, please? 4:15 of Philippians.
You yourselves also know, Philippians, that at the first preaching of the gospel, after I left Macedonia, no church shared with me in the matter of giving and receiving, but you alone.
Okay. So let's go back to Acts 16, and that is where he's talking about the first time. And we know that Paul had intended to go one way, and God said, no, that's not the way I want you to go. And so they were calling him to Macedonia. So he was sent to Macedonia by God's direction. And the first place that he went that we know of that he did preaching was Philippi. And so this is the church now that he's writing this letter back to. And so he converted Lydia and her household there. And then he drove the slave girl out and made her masters mad, and wound up, because they lost their income, that he wound up in jail by being falsely accused. They beat him and threw him into the jail, into the prison. And there we know he was fastened in stocks, and there was an earthquake, and the jailer thought they were all about to escape, and Paul stopped him from hurting himself. So he taught the jailer and his family. And after that, he's pretty much invited to leave the city. Not too nicely, but, you know, we want you out of here. And so he did. After he went by and encouraged the brethren at Lydia's house, then he went on, and then he went to Thessalonica and Berea and Athens. And then he went to Corinth, where we find in Acts 17... he's there, and then we see in 1 Corinthians where it talks about nobody had support with him, except nobody sent money to him or helped him except the Macedonians, which would have been the church at Philippi. And so that was the first time that they helped him, and now this is the second time. They were poor and oppressed, but they had a commitment to Paul and his work. You know, had you seen what went on to Paul in Philippians and in Philippi, what would have made you want to do? I want to distance myself from that man. Why should I help him? I don't want anybody to have any idea that I have any contact with him. He doesn't have any influence on me. I'm done with him. But they didn't. They sent him money when he was in Corinth, and now they've sent him again. And would we continue to support a man like this? If a man came here and he was driven out of town by the law because of what he was preaching, would we continue to be supportive of his work and even help him financially?
Pray so.
Well, we pray so. But if we don't have these two attitudes, we may not. And so, you know, and it seemed like he started, I didn't talk about it, but when he was in Thessalonica and Berea, there was more tumult and persecution in Athens. He preached, but he didn't have any success. He was really not a successful preacher in a lot of ways, worldly, you know, the, I don't know if the health and wealth gospel, the preachers that preach that these days, if they even have read the life of Paul. They don't know what sacrifice is. All they want is send me money and you'll be blessed. So is there any other comments on what this was not the first time in the circumstances that Paul was going through at that time?
It just shows how much they rejoiced over learning the truth. I mean, you know, they were so grateful. And the Philippians even were begging, you know, to send money out of their poverty because they have got this gospel. They have got this good news. They have been saved, and it's everything to them. Even though they're persecuted because of their faith, and you know, and Paul, you know, was persecuted, and of course Jesus was put on the cross. Here they were putting their hope and trust in a man that's Jews put on the cross, and so you know, they are just so glad to be. That this is the outgrowth of really being grateful, really being thankful.
I think sometimes when people are oppressed, they're more thankful for, even though it's not in this life, but that it gives them a better life to look forward to. We get so busy enjoying our life here, and it's wonderful. God wants us to enjoy our life here. It's what Ecclesiastes is all about. But we get so wrapped up in enjoying life here that we forget that there's an afterlife that's more important, that's a lot more long-lasting than the one here. And rich men can be just as righteous. Abraham was a rich man, and he was very righteous. I've known some men who were very wealthy and are very committed to God. But those are few and far between. Most of them trust in their riches, like the rich young ruler. Trusted in his riches.
On the Philippians, before they could send anything, don't you think they prayed for Paul?
And oh, sure.
Prayers lifted up?
Yes.
You know,
and yes. And that's something we can think of today. We can pray for the preachers we support. We can send encouraging notes. And we did this once years and years and years ago. But along with the preacher, there's the preacher's wife. And sometimes it would be good if we would remember her. Find out her name. Send her a note to encourage her. Because not only is maybe she suffering things, but it's real hard to see your husband be mistreated sometimes. In places that they're struggling and having hard times. And in other countries where things are so poor. I guess when Sister Williams came, they stayed with us. They stayed in our home twice in the visits they came before she died. And she was one of the most frugal and yet so happy to be frugal people I've ever seen. The young man that travels with Paul, who's not going to get to come with him, but is taking Paul all around, was a foster child that they took in. His mother had died of AIDS. And there were several children like that they did. How many of us would want to do that? Totally different nationalities, know nothing about their culture much except what little you've learned while you're there. Because I don't think that, I guess they'd been there a while. They've been there over 50 years, I guess. But but things that they're willing to go through. And so, but yes, we can remember them in our prayers, and that's something very important. Okay, let's look at some of the things Paul forfeited. Let's look at First Philippians chapter 3, verse 4 through 11. I'm going to read all of this, but it talks about him, the confidence he had in the flesh. He was a Jew. I mean, if anybody could claim to be a Jew, it was Paul. Circumcised the eighth day, tribe of Benjamin. He was a Pharisee, and nobody had any more zeal than he did. He was a persecutor of the church. And according to the righteousness which is in the law, he was found blameless. And so he had a pretty high position in life at this time before he became a Christian. And when he became a Christian, he knew that he was going to be giving up all of his power and prestige. That was, he knew what it meant to be on the other side of what he was going to be receiving, because he'd been on the other side giving it out. And so he knew about those things, but he counted all that but loss. He had no, that which was gain, he was ready to give it away, give it up, after he learned the truth. And he called it rubbish or refuse. Did anybody think to look up that word as to what it meant?
Rubbish?
Uh-huh.
Trash.
Trash. The word itself could, several things that it could mean. The waste from our body, or the leavings of a feast, like that which is thrown away from the table and given to the dogs. And so that's pretty low things for Paul to consider. All the things that he had held so dear, now they were just trash to him. Garbage, something to be fed to the dogs, or even worse. And now he's going to be on the receiving end of all that he has been giving out. Why did Paul feel this way? Why did he feel like it was worth all of this to give this up? Turn to Philippians chapter 2, verse 9 through 11. It's because of what he was doing. Lauren, read verse 9 through 11, please.
Therefore, God also has highly exalted him and given him the name which is above every name, that in the name of Jesus every knee should bow, of those in heaven and of those on earth and of those under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father.
Because of who he was going to be working for, if you want to put it that way, who he was going to be serving, the great and glorious Son of God, who had been so highly exalted, and that every knee is going to bow to him one day. They may not on this earth, but someday every knee will bow to him. And every tongue is going to confess who he is. And so that was why he was willing to sacrifice what all he sacrificed, because of the service that he's being put into. Paul was a remarkable man to feel this way about losing his financial support and position. What would we do? If somebody told you, now that you're a Christian, and not all Christians are expected to do this, this was Paul's particular challenge, but we need to try to apply this to our challenges when we face them. What is our attitude when we're faced with a challenge that seems too hard, that seems bad? Something happens in our life, and we think, how could God do this to me? How could God cause me to have to go through this? Stop and think about Paul and what he was willing to give up. And yet he faced it rejoicing, rejoicing, rejoicing. All through the book of Philippians, he talks about rejoice, rejoice, rejoice.
You know, the devil wasn't through with Paul. Paul decided to give up being Pharisee of Pharisees, and his position, his power, probably his family. Everything to get up behind. The devil went through with him. He got to a city in Acts 14, and they were going to make him a god. And so, you know, they were going to treat him with his honor and praise and glory, but his humility and his wanting to serve Christ was above the adulation of men. And so he says, I'm just a man like you. So, you know, the devil is always there, even if we're doing the right thing, to get us maybe where he thinks is our weakness.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul, with his thorn in the flesh, said, the Lord gave it to me, you know, he didn't remove it because I might exalt myself. Mm-hmm. So, you know, here God is even on Paul's side.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he sees the work he's doing, and he sees his attitude. And so even the distress of the thorn in the flesh was for his good.
That's right. So for whatever we suffer, whatever we have to do without, God, if we're just doing it to serve God, or even sometimes we get so wrapped up in the world, it's really not about serving God. It's about me and what I want. And so if you're not careful, when you teach and people tell you how wonderful you are and all that, what you have to bring them back to, it's not me. It's not what I say. And that's where Paul was. It's not. It's because it's Christ. That's the whole point. Whatever, whoever we teach, whatever we share, no matter what they offer us that we know we shouldn't take, it's back to what is right and good in the sight of God. Margaret, would you read Matthew chapter 6, verse 33, please? Okay. The circumstances of this, if you start back up in verse 25, well, in verse 24, he says you can't serve two masters. You'll either hate the one and be devoted to one or despise one. You can't serve them both. You can't serve God and wealth. And so he goes on to tell him, you don't even be worried about what you're going to eat, what you're going to drink, what you're going to put on your body. Don't worry about anything. You seek God first, and he's going to see that you have what you need. And Paul believes that. Paul believed, I'm walking away from everything I have, all my position, all my power, my wealth. I'm sure they didn't let him take everything with him. I don't know if they took his money or not, but he didn't seem to have a lot of it a lot of times. He had to work to support himself and those who were traveling with him at times. And so if we serve him, he's going to take care of us. He's not going to require us or put us through any trial that we can't withstand. And some of the trials that Paul had make ours look pretty trivial when we stop and think about them. There was another man that came to mind. Look at Hebrews. Kisa, would you read Hebrews chapter 11, verse 24 through 26, please? Okay. And how did he do all of this? By faith. And that's what we have to have. We have to have faith. Verse 27, he left Egypt. Verse 28, he kept the Passover. By faith, they passed through the Red Sea. Whose faith do you think it was but that really got him through the Red Sea? Moses. I mean, they all passed through. But if Moses hadn't have been there continually prodding them on, I mean, oh, Egypt, the Egyptians are coming. And so, but Moses left. He could have been, he was a prince in Egypt. He could have lived quietly and peacefully and had a lot of money and fame and fortune. But he chose to serve God instead. And so we're going to forfeit things in this life for serving God. It's just, that's just the way it is. That's the way it works. And, but we have to be willing to sacrifice and do the things that are required of us. Okay, I kind of divided these up in different sections. It's all in the same section here. And let's go to 2 Corinthians 11. There's several things. We were going to look at things he suffered and things he endured and faced and those kind of things. I should have put on your lesson verse chapter 11, verse 23 through 28. I don't know how that got left off and why I didn't, but I did. This is a list of the things that we're going to be talking about. Sally, would you read verse 23 through 28, please, of 2 Corinthians 11.
Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more in labors, more abundant in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequent, in deaths oft. Of the Jews 5 times received I 40 stripes, save one. Thrice was I beaten with rods, once was I stoned, thrice I suffered shipwreck, a night and a day have I been in the deep. In journeyings often, in perils of water, in perils of robbers, in perils of mine own countrymen, in perils by the heathen, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and painfulness, in watchings often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. Beside those things that are without, that which come upon me daily, the care of all the churches.
Does that sound like a life you'd want to live? I'll be honest, that's not the life I would want to live. I'm not saying that someday I won't have to suffer a lot of things, but I don't think we can ever compare with what Paul's done. You know, I think after I'd been beaten two or three times, I'd give up and go somewhere else. But he kept working among the same people, the Jews. Acts 16, he talks about, we see here that he's beaten. Verse 23, when he talks about beaten times without number, we have no idea. Some of these things that are listed on here, everything that, we're not going to be able to check them all off and each time. God writes the Bible for us to have faith, not to satisfy our curiosity. If Hollywood could have gotten a hold of a diary, if Paul ever kept one and made a movie out of it, it would have lasted a week with all of these things that he's listed. But in Acts 16, verse 22-24 is one of the times that we know of that he was beaten. Elizabeth, would you read that, please?
Rose up together against them, and the chief priests tore their robes off them and proceeded to order them to be beaten with rods. When they had struck them with many blows, they threw them into prison, commanding the jailer to guard them securely. And he, having received such a command, threw them into the inner prison and fastened their feet in stocks.
Okay, so this is in Philippi, where we talked about earlier that he was beaten. And it's one way of him saying, I'm going to do what I'm going to do no matter what. He didn't say, okay, I'll stop preaching. And then he gets in the prison, and what does he do? He teaches the jailer. So they can't stop him no matter what. The only other time that I know of that we have a recording, and if I've missed one, I'm happy for anybody to speak up, is in Acts 21. 32. Linda, would you read that, please?
21.
Mm-hmm.
32.
Mm-hmm.
And once he took along some soldiers and centurions and ran down to them, and when they saw the commander and the soldiers, they stopped beating Paul.
Okay, so the first time, it was Gentiles that was beating him. This time, it's Jews. And this time, it's just kind of a mad mob. It's not like, okay, I don't think this is one of the 39 stripes, the 39 stripes, because this is just a mob. And they don't know how many, who's hitting him, and, you know, they're just a bunch of them. It's a mob scene. And so,
verse 31 says they were trying to kill him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he said he was in fear of death. I mean, he was in death, straits of death several times. That was in the list that we read. There were people there. When this Second Corinthians letter was written, all this list of things Paul wrote said, well, I only read twice in the scriptures that he was beaten. And he talks about how many times the Jews beat him and how many times, you know, he just stripes without number. What's all this about? If Paul didn't have proof of this and people didn't know this, what do you think the Jews would have done with this now?
Yeah, when they ran him out of town, you didn't hear that they were beating him, but they probably were.
Yes, that's right. But do you think if the Jews could have proved that Paul was lying, what would they have done? They would have stepped up and done it. They would have put a stop to this. They would have proved him a liar and the gospel he was preaching to be false. And so If all this didn't happen to Paul, he was a fool for writing this in this letter. Because this letter was, it wasn't, this letter got out. There were people who read this letter, people who were Paul's enemies, false brethren. They'd have been glad to go and tell the Jews, get rid of Paul. They would have been real happy about this. But it wasn't the case because it was true. So when we read about what all Paul went through, we think, good grief, surely he's not embellishing this a little bit. He didn't have to embellish. His life was bad enough as it was. Anybody have any comments on the beatings that Paul endured?
I think part of them, they suggested, would be humiliating.
Yes. And can you, it's bad enough. You know, when you spank your kids, they feel it a little bit through the jeans. If you take the jeans off and just spank them through their underwear, that hurts. But if you take them and strip them naked and you pop them, you hit them with a belt, there's nothing between them and what's hitting them. And the things that they hit, you know, if you get beat with a rod, I don't know how big a rod. I don't think it was a steel rod. But even my mother used to whip me with a switch on my legs, and that hurt. That would sting a little bit. But if it was big enough to be considered a rod, even if it was off of a tree, that's going to hurt. And if you get 39 lashes, and this wasn't a mom spanking her kids, trying to teach them a lesson, wanting to hurt them but not really wanting to injure them. And another man beating you 39 times with a rod on your back. And so that's right. The beatings, we need to try to comprehend what these beatings are. They're not like we spank our kids or fist fight somebody. You have no resistance. I don't know if they tied them. They could very well have. And so it makes it very hard to, there's no way to defend yourself in these beatings. So that was one of the things that Paul suffered. Okay, I've got about 2 minutes, so I'm going to stop at number 7 here, and we'll pick up there next week.